Now that the game is done, it's our time to check in.
Nembhard gets it to Halliburton, off balance, the three, he hits it with a foul. You have got to be kidding me.
Bucks Talk starts now.
A four-point play to win it for the Pacers, and the Bucks are going to have to sit with that lump in their stomach for the next 48 hours.
Live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios, here's Justin Garcia.
I mean, what do you say to that? It, of course, had to be Tyrese Halliburton. It had to be a four-point play to end it. I'm sure there's a lot of questions over late-game execution, especially the defense on that final play by the Pacers. We unfortunately didn't get a chance to hear from Doc Rivers tonight because of some connection issues with the arena in Indy. Boy, would really love to hear what Doc Rivers had to say. But, there's a couple of things to really pick apart with that final play. Just in terms of the 48 minutes that we saw, another game where even though the fast break points were way out of whack and in favor of the Indiana Pacers, I don't think it's always as simple as saying, well, they went fast break. I mean, that was a big area to circle. Sometimes it doesn't mean quite as much. In this one, it did. When you look at the transition, offense and defense, offense for the Pacers, defense for the Bucks, how the Pacers performed. I don't want to get too statistical on this show, but you've heard me reference advanced stats quite a bit. They were plus 14.4 in transition, were the Indiana Pacers. So in other words, they're adding more than 14 points per 100 possessions to their overall tally with the way they're playing in transition. The Bucks were a negative team in transition. So in that regard, the fast break points did tell a large factual piece of this story. Free throws basically even, three-point shooting basically even, field goal efficiency basically even. Pacers were getting out and running on the Bucks, and the Pacers were forcing Bucks turnovers. And not always forcing. Some of them were just self-inflicted wounds by the Bucks, but turnovers and points off of turnovers. A big, big piece of this as well. So we can pick apart all those things. But for 47 minutes and 56 seconds, it didn't appear as though it mattered. In that situation, you think about some of the breaks the Bucks started to get, too. Some of the missed open looks the Pacers had down the stretch. Aaron Nesmith missed two late threes, right? One from the exact same spot that he knocked down that huge three to beat the Celtics in the conference finals. Or not beat the Celtics, but to push the Celtics in the conference semifinals. You think about the bobble that Brooke Lopez had, where if he doesn't bobble that above the break, you get a wide open look for Gary Trent Jr. in the corner. You still got to look for Gary Trent. Everything was a little more compressed and he missed it. Think about the missed free throw from Andrew Nembhard. There are all these things that started to go the Bucks' way. You felt like, man, we really dodged one here. I'll take it. And then those final 4 seconds happened. So there's a lot, as I said, to pick apart and critique for how this game closed in that final 3.9. The timeout, the challenge, all of it, how the Bucks defended it. I am very curious to hear the general consensus. I have my opinions. I'm curious what the rest of you think. I'm pretty sure it's going to be aligned with how I feel about it. 855-616-1620, the number to join us tonight on Bucks Talk. That's the Siding Unlimited talk and text line. Disaster is an understatement for those final 4 seconds. Let's head to the phone lines and start our trek through your thoughts on the close to this one. And get a very, very, I'm sure, calculated response here from Dick in Port Washington. Dick, what'd you think of those final 4 seconds?
I'll tell you. It had to be that front runner prick from Oshkosh that makes that bucket. That makes me sick. He's a front runner. I would say overall we played well enough. They needed this game more than we did. Now, I'm not whistling past the graveyard. Yes. They needed it more.
They needed it to avoid losing the tiebreaker.
Yeah, for sure. And they hung on. And one thing I was confused about, did we challenge that last foul?
So that's what I was unclear on, too, because Scott Foster made it seem like, yes, the Bucks did.
On TV, what they showed while they were waiting was a Bucks had a foul or a timeout left.
Yeah, and they had none at
after
the end.
After that play, that was gone.
Yeah.
But no explanation. My only criticism is
you
at that point, you don't challenge that.
Yeah.
We could have had the ball at midcourt.
Yeah. Yep.
Right?
Yep. I mean, that was my initial take, too. You can't challenge that. You have to advance the ball.
No.
And it was, frankly, a foul. Giannis invaded Tyrese Halliburton's landing space.
It was. And on TV, they were talking about a foot on the line. Foster never even mentioned that.
Yeah.
He was just checking the foul. I don't think there was an angle you could see it. Brooke was in the way.
Mm-hmm.
But I think he was in. But if we challenged it, a stupid coaching decision. And my other part on this is why didn't we leak
Dame,
Trent, and anybody else down to shoot a three-pointer?
Yeah.
Giannis took it all the way. Give it to him in the middle.
Get somebody down the floor that he can pull the pressure and pass it. Yeah.
Right. Right or left, and have a clean shot.
Yeah.
Dame, Trent, put AJ in. They can't guard them all.
Yeah.
But instead, we take it to the hole. I don't understand that. So I think there were two coaching errors at the end. Overall, I'm somewhat pleased the way we played, and some of it is because I'm going to the game Saturday night, and it's going to be tremendous. I mean, I hate to say that. I guess that's the ego in me not wanting to admit that we lost to these schmucks. We got to get, if we can win Saturday, it would be tremendous in a lot of different ways.
That's
my take.
What did you, before you go, what did you think about the way they lined up defensively on that play?
The head coach didn't design that play. I don't know if you noticed this. There was some other guy. And they've used this play before.
Mm-hmm.
I think what I would have done, we took them out beyond the arc.
Yeah.
And I think you want to step back and see where they're going to go and then disperse. We dispersed too soon, in my opinion. And this pick play that Halliburton got, I don't know. What do you think? What's your take on that defensive setup?
As soon as you saw the way the Pacers were lining up, I think the alarm bells were starting to go off. Like, wait a minute. How familiar are they with what they're doing here? This doesn't feel like this feels like the Pacers are going to get some type of look. I, frankly, in that situation, I would have played five switchable defenders. Like, I know they had Brook Lopez defending the inbounds pass. They need a three. Have guys that can switch from one to another if you do have a pick play. And I would have pressed them and made them take that full time to get up a contested shot. I think when you
worry about the pass over the top.
Fine.
You know, you'd have to have Brook back there then.
But who cares about the pass over the top?
Well, yeah, I suppose. And, well, Siakam can hit a three.
Yeah. I mean, I'll live with that if that's what happens. But, yeah, I just – it's a shame, too, because we had technical glitches with our broadcast setup in Indiana. And, boy, if there was ever a night you wanted to hear what Doc Rivers had to say, it was tonight.
Yeah. And my wife and I counted seven steals and buckets on bad passes.
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
lazy, but passes.
Yeah, it's a lot.
At least seven.
Of, yeah, I mean, we saw, and it's nothing new. When it works, it's a great pass. When it doesn't, it's, what are we doing here? But it, a lot of those Dame pocket passes where you just try to thread the needle through defenders. And, I mean, I think we counted three of those in the first half, and especially against Indiana. I mean, that's where...
Oh, there were more than three in the first half. I mean,
well, that's all I chose to count, Dick.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
But especially against the Pacers, it's just gift-wrapping them points with the way they get out in transition.
And the only... I'll get going here because I'm sure there's other people who want to talk. There's two other things here is that, you know, these breakaway points, when you take away the bad passes, those count as breakout points.
Mm-hmm.
And even with the discrepancy there, we still should have won the game.
Yeah.
The more telling take on it is points in the paint. Now, I haven't seen that. Did we lead in that?
They did, but it was, I think it was only four.
Oh, they did or we
the
did?
The Bucks did, but I think it was only four that they outscored them by.
Okay. Because I think we learned a lot. I can't wait for Saturday night. I mean, I won't be able to sleep Friday night, I'll tell you that. So, go Bucks.
All right, Dick, thanks for the call. A disappointing loss here for the Bucks, to put it mildly. 115 to 114. 855-616-1620, the Siding Unlimited talk and text line to join us tonight, but a lot to dig into. The way the Bucks defended that final play, the elephant in the room on the foul, too. And when I say that, I don't think it's what you think I'm saying. We've already seen a couple of texts come in criticizing the foul call. No one other than Scott Foster calls that foul. It was a foul. You have to give Halliburton room to come down, and Giannis did not. I do agree with Dick. Pacers did need this one more to avoid losing the head-to-head series. The Pacers had lost three straight games. Now the Bucks have lost three straight games. But now it puts a lot of pressure on you on Saturday night. Not only because of what that game means in terms of the head-to-head tiebreaker, but what is immediately in front of you after Saturday. And, oh, by the way, you got to get to Saturday with Luka Doncic and the Lakers coming to town on Thursday. So we'll get into that conversation as well coming up after this. But a very, very disappointing and memorable, for all the wrong reasons, loss for the Bucks tonight in Indiana to the Pacers. 115 to 114. More after this on Bucks Talk. 115 to 114. Indiana Pacers knock off the Bucks tonight. You heard Dick's thoughts, and specifically his thoughts on Tyrese Halliburton. I do think it's fair to say Pacers did need this one more than the Bucks. It's not to say the Bucks don't need this game. Like, we've talked about the schedule that's in front of them, but Pacers were a more desperate team for this one. If they lose this game, they're two games back of the Bucks, and they've lost the head-to-head tiebreaker. So that two-game margin becomes three. I do think, you know how much I hate to speak in absolutes, but I do think there is now one thing we are absolutely certain of with this loss tonight. Bucks are not catching the Knicks. We had this conversation last week when Jalen Brunson went down with an ankle injury, and I think Jalen Brunson's going to miss more than 2 weeks. They're going to reevaluate him in 2 weeks. But I know there was a lot of optimism and hope that the Bucks can now catch the Knicks. This is their opening. I was doing a different show that day, and we were talking about where the Bucks are in relation to the Knicks, and it said, well, the math is not on your side. It is going to take something like a massive injury, a significant injury to one of the key players of the Knicks, probably Jalen Brunson, for that door to be cracked ajar. And then you got it. but you have proceeded to go 0-3 since then. You're what, 5 games back of the Knicks now? They have the tiebreaker. And like, that's the one thing I cannot stress enough. We all look at the standings. When you look at the standings, look in the loss column. That's the part that is most important, because you can add wins. You can add to your win total. You cannot do anything with losses. Once they're there, they're there. So look at the loss column and use that to gauge how far back a team is. In the loss column, the Bucks are still one up on the Pistons, and they've won both games against the Pistons. We mentioned your two biggest games of the season were tonight and Saturday night, the two games against the Pacers, because those two teams are 4-5 in the Eastern Conference, and you have a chance to secure that tiebreaker. So there are more anticipated games, marquee games on the schedule, but those two are your most important ones. And the caveat was always, for now, those are your most two most important games for now. There's a chance you have two more important games, the final two games of the regular season. And the hope it wouldn't come to that. Again, you beat the Magic. You win this game tonight. You're feeling pretty good. And now that's wide open. And the way the Detroit Pistons have been playing, they're going to have a ton of confidence. It's a very, very deflating loss. I know it's 1 out of 82, so you don't want to make too much out of that. But for all the obvious reasons, the way you played, good enough to win, even with the flaws, you played well enough to win. I think your defense, you know, as we just pointed out, the fast break points and the big difference it was there, still markedly different than your defense in those games against the Pacers last year. The ball movement, another big item we talked about quite a bit over the weekend. We talked about three-point shooting for some reason and ball movement. Bucks had a high volume of assists. They had 17 assists at halftime in this game and finished the game with 32 assists. They're moving the ball. But there's a couple of things that stood out about the offense and are frankly the questions this team is going to have to answer as we move closer to the postseason, and that is Damian Lillard's impact. Like, I'm not to the point to say, hey, I'm concerned about Damian Lillard. It wasn't a great Dame game. Now, he was able to make an impact in other ways with those 11 assists, but the move that you made to bring in Kyle Kuzma and send out Chris Middleton and say, we're leaning into youth and athleticism and we're bringing in defense and versatility, it puts importance on Giannis and Dame to be 30-point scorers, right? 25-point scorers. You need to consistently get that from Damian Lillard, but you need a third guy, and it doesn't have to be the same guy every single night that's giving you 15 or 20 points. You just need to have somebody that is out there and hitting big shots. And as of this moment, it's been Brook Lopez as your third guy. I think when you look at clutch shots, and granted, we didn't see it in the fourth quarter tonight. It rimmed out. But you can start to make a case. Gary Trent Jr. is the guy that's hit your biggest shots in those clutch moments. But between Gary Trent Jr., Torian Prince, and there's, I'm sure, a lot of discourse to get to on Torian Prince when you look at the box score tonight. Between those guys, A.J. Green, game in and game out, you need one of those guys to consistently be knocking down shots. And in the case of A.J. Green, too, had some pretty good looks. Look, he shot 40% tonight at 2 of 5 on threes. But it's those critical looks at the key moments in the game you need to fall. And that's another thing that has been missing from this team by and large for the last week, week and a half. 855-616-1620. The Siding Unlimited talk and text line to join us tonight on Bucks Talk. Some more comments to get to in the chat. And on that text line, we'll get to that. I mentioned there's one other key piece of that final play that I do want to touch on. And also, to awkwardly shift gears now, the news that hit us all shortly before the game in regards to a Junior Bridgman. So we'll get to all of that coming up after this on Bucks Talk.
Gary Trent, deep corner three, and he splashes it through. The Bucks have vaulted back ahead by two. A 7-0 scoring run, and Gary Trent Jr. delivers.
Yeah, I mean, at the flip of a switch, this one went from you're feeling really good to grind this out and say, hey, played well enough to win. I don't know that you outplayed the Pacers, but you did enough to win this game, and you locked up the tiebreaker. You've now made that difference two games, essentially three, with that tiebreaker in hand to the, holy crap, how did they lose this game? Like, that last 4 seconds. Is this a joke? Was one of the texts that I got from somebody else during the game that was in Indy. 855-616-1620, the number to join us tonight on Bucks Talk. A few of you chiming in on Twitter as well, saying this one broke you. And a brutal loss for the Bucks. So that's currently where we're at here on March 11th in the team that was 11 games above 500, now a three-game losing streak. And look, we said this at the time of the Bucks starting to build some momentum here and looking really good coming out of the All-Star break. There's going to be a downturn. There's going to be a losing streak yet. Like, it looks great now. There's going to be another stretch where you're questioning, man, what's wrong with this team? It's the nature of an 82-game schedule, so be prepared for it. But I agree, this one was tough. I mean, this wasn't even a sucker punch. This was, I don't know what the analogy was. This was a steel chair to the back. And it had to be Tyrese Halliburton. So I mentioned there's one thing about that final play. We've talked about, and feel free to share your thoughts as well. 855-616-1620, the Siding Unlimited talk and text line, or leave them in the chat on YouTube if you're streaming this. Talked about the way the Bucks defended that play. My biggest question, and again, why you really wish we could have heard from Doc Rivers, I would have just had five switchable guys on the floor. Like, at that point, I don't know that you need to defend the inbounds pass. And a few people suggesting, well, just play the perimeter. Put all five guys at the three-point line, space them out, and I mean, that's, I don't know how, that usually doesn't work. It's just, you're going to have the guy walking into a three and getting somewhat of a decent look. I just would have pressed on that inbound. I would have played up on all those guys in the backcourt and said, if you want to catch it back here, fine. We're going to defend you on it. But the one aspect that is indisputable, it was a foul on Giannis. He did not give Tyrese Halliburton room to come down on that shot, on that closeout. And Giannis is still the best defensive player on this team. But we've seen this a handful of times now on similar plays. I think it was against the Wizards a couple years back, or the Suns, where he had a similar closeout. Maybe it was both, against both Devin Booker and Bradley Beal. I believe it was the Wizards, where Giannis had a closeout on Bradley Beal. Similar play. I think the most memorable one, game two, I think, against the Miami Heat in the bubble. Similar closeout on Jimmy Butler. Bucks lose the game on those free throws. It's tough because you don't want to rein in his instincts there, but you're not contesting that shot. Like, you go after the challenge there, the most likely result is a foul. As we said, this closes the door, I think, on the three seed to be five games back and not have the tiebreaker against the Knicks. You got 18 games left. So do the math, right? You go 12-6. Let's say it means the Knicks have to go 6-12 the rest of the way. It's not happening. 12-6 is going to be very challenging with the schedule that's in front of the Bucks too. And You know, I mentioned Saturday's very important. Like, obviously, Saturday is very important for the Bucks because now the pressure is on you to wrap up that tiebreaker, to hopefully the losing streak will have ended come Thursday, but to secure the tiebreaker and then again, knowing what is directly in front of you. The very next night, the Oklahoma City Thunder come to Milwaukee. For night two of a back-to-back for you, it is not for them. And then a day later, you're going to leave for a five-game West Coast road trip. It starts with the Warriors, who have been playing much better of late. Then you go to Los Angeles, and the Lakers are going to be up against it in terms of their schedule. They got a couple of back-to-backs there because of all the maneuvering they had to do with their schedule, because of those Southern California wildfires. They still got Luka Doncic, and you're still going to have to contend with that. You got the Sacramento Kings on the schedule. You've got the Denver Nuggets and the Phoenix Suns. And, oh, by the way, it's a Bucks team that's still below 500 on the road now. Losing record on the road, among the worst of all the playoff teams. Road records that we look at here for the Bucks. This loss drops the Bucks to 14-17 on the road. Between that and the recent track record we've seen in those five-game road trips, that's why we say, look, it's a tough schedule. You can't count on 12-6, 13-5, 11-7 even, because of the back-to-backs, the quality of opponents that you have on your schedule. I haven't looked to see what it's updated to as of now with this Pacers game off, but I would imagine the Bucks are still no lower than 6th or 7th in terms of most difficult schedule remaining in the league. That's the challenge that's in front of this team. And we said it a couple of times, that Magic game certainly went back to this conversation. The games that you're in, the winnable games, those are the games because of this schedule you have to take advantage of. You have to claw out wins in those games because you don't know what's around the corner. You know it's going to be tough. You don't know how many of those games you're going to have a chance to look back and say, man, we stole that one. And all these games matter. So Bucks are now 8th in terms of most difficult schedule. Good news for the Bucks, by the way. Number 8, it is not the toughest schedule in the Eastern Conference. The Detroit Pistons have the toughest schedule left in the Eastern Conference. So there's that. That's working for you if you're the Bucks, but an absolute gut punch of a loss here tonight for this Bucks team, who, again, 8 games above 500 after getting up to 11 and feeling like you were really building something, and now you're in a dogfight the rest of the way with the Indiana Pacers. 855-616-1620, the Siding Unlimited talk and text line to join us tonight. Not just the Indiana Pacers, by the way. You're in a dogfight with the Pacers and with the Detroit Pistons. I do want to take a look at some of the individual performances that we've seen of late here for the Bucks team. We'll get into that conversation and skim through some of the questions and feedback you guys have from this Bucks loss. We'll get into that coming up after this on Bucks Talk. Bucks lose a heartbreaker to the Indiana Pacers tonight. There was no happiness in Indiana, not for the Bucks at least. 115-114. So I don't think we have any, we as in everyone, audio of Doc Rivers post game. This was, so to peel back the curtain a little bit, this was a TNT exclusive game. Whenever that's the case, it's pretty difficult to get the audio feeds. Like, we have to put in a lot of work to get some assistance to get that feed to us. It typically comes to us from our guys over at FanDuel Sports Network. So took a little bit of finesse to get the pregame feed, and then for whatever reason, it just wasn't there after the game. Someone from the Bucks asked me for the audio for Doc, or from Doc, talking about Junior Bridgman, who, by the way, we mentioned earlier, which means I think the Bucks weren't recording that, so I don't know that we're going to hear what Doc Rivers had to say after this game tonight, but we can read what he had to say. So Eric has been tweeting out at least some of the Doc comments. And, I mean, obviously the million-dollar question is the last play.
Absolutely, yeah. Eric Name saying he asked Doc Rivers, I'm sure it was the first question, about the challenge. And the reasoning was because they thought he stepped out of bounds. Not because, or not necessarily because it was a foul. I suppose it could have been a bonus on top of it. But the primary reasoning is they thought he stepped out of bounds. His staff believed that he stepped out of bounds, is how Name worded it in the tweet.
Maybe he did, you know, like all the views that we saw, unfortunately, which again, how is this the only view that we have of the play? But
right.
That view was obstructed by Brooke Lopez. Look, if, because that was right in front of the Bucks bench that play happened. So if his staff is right there in front of it and says, we saw he stepped out of bounds, I mean, if you're adamant, I guess I can't fault you for saying, no, my guys saw it, and they're pretty adamant this happened. All right, but you advance the ball with 3.9 seconds. You put five shooters on the floor. You don't even need a three.
I was
going to
say, you could do anything you want. It's not even just a
Giannis
game.
Giannis rolling into the basket, and with 3 seconds in the half court, you got a chance to do something. So that's a tough part. I tried to, and maybe the timelines are off here, but in watching this team recently, there's been a couple of things that stood out, or at least seem like they stand out. It feels like AJ Green is kind of in a shooting funk here. But as you dig into the numbers, it's just not the case. So it just kind of seems like the shots that you remember are the shots that he's been missing. So if we look at AJ Green since the All-Star break, he was shooting 39% on threes, making just over two and taking 5.5 per game. That's since the All-Star break. Going into the All-Star break, AJ Green was shooting 42% on threes, making just over two, taking five. So his makes identical on a per-game basis, his shooting percentage up a couple of basis points. But it's not quite as severe as it would have seemed like in watching these games. The other big piece is Brooke Lopez. So it seems like, Brooke Lopez is not taking threes, which I know would please a lot of this audience, right? Of the spacing concerns and everything else. But again, that is another statistic that just doesn't match the eye test. He's taken about a half a three fewer per game since the All-Star break. And he has been more efficient. Or actually, no, he has not been more efficient. Shooting 35% since the All-Star break, was shooting 37% before the All-Star break. But you are using him around the basket more. And, you know, I said you need to find, it doesn't have to be consistent in terms of a big three, but you need a consistent third scorer. That consistent word, it doesn't even have to be the same guy. It just means consistently there's another guy that is scoring for you. Whether it's Kyle Kuzma, AJ Green, tonight it was Torian Prince. I'm sure there's a lot of feedback on that. We've already seen a few comments there. Gary Trent Jr., right? But it has to be someone. Maybe that's Brooke Lopez. Like it's kind of been Brooke Lopez of late and since the trade deadline, or All-Star break at least. But the way that they're using him, we've started to see the Bucks again explore those opportunities in the paint. And you look at when the double comes over, they're stashing Brooke in the double in the dunker spot a lot more and putting him around the rim. So if you're going to help onto Giannis, well, either we got a shooter that's one pass away that you helped off of, or Brooke Lopez is under the rim. So that's helped the offense. But I think they're still searching And, you know, I go back to what Giannis said after the Cavs game. The whole vibe. Did you see his comments after the Cavs game?
I don't think so.
So the whole vibe was, we've seen Giannis with an elevated sense of urgency and not like pressing the panic button or sounding the alarm, but basically Giannis, hey, we got to fix this and we got to figure, like, go back to earlier this season, right? That was not Giannis in the locker room after the Cavs. And he was asked about that matchup with Cleveland. Hey, as of right now, and who knows now, but as of right now, this would be your second round opponent. Ultimate caveat there, a team that's lost in the first round 2 years in a row, you got to get out of the first round. But the sense was, look, I think we overthought things. We tried to move the ball around a little too much, asked about the size of the Cavs. Like, what did that do? He shot it down. Doc Rivers, too. Didn't shoot it down, but was like, well, Cleveland doesn't really play big. They do at the start of the game, and then they stagger those guys. And Giannis's whole approach was, if I can put words in his mouth and read between the lines, I know they're a good team. We're not concerned. We feel like we had opportunities we didn't execute and capitalize on. We played them close two times earlier in the year. If that's who we draw, that's who we draw, so be it. But we're not worried about the Cleveland Cavaliers.
May I speak for the fans here real quick?
No.
Just looking at the numbers, you know, you hear that. But I think a lot of Bucks fans are then seeing the games and
seeing 0-9
correct.
Against the Cavs,
exactly
the Celtics, and the Knicks.
And just thinking, in theory, like, since the trade deadline, team looks way better. All of those things, a lot of positive aspects to that. And on paper, this team makes sense as a championship team. So the frustration is, why aren't we seeing that at least more consistently, especially against the top-tier teams?
Well, and that was like what he kind of wrapped it with was, we're... He didn't use this exact phrase, but basically we're still a work in progress. We got new pieces that we're working in the mix. We're still learning with those guys and figuring out what the best way to play with and off of them is. So, like, it was really like one big shoulder shrug of, I'm not worried about it. It's going to get there. I will say this, too. When you look at, you know, you mentioned the team makes sense now. You look at, there was one stretch tonight in, I think, the third quarter where back-to-back plays. Kyle Kuzma just got the inbound, immediately down the floor, attacking Obi Toppin and saying, like, this guy's not a good defender. Let's make him defend. The personnel of having Kyle Kuzma, the Bucks didn't have that last year. You couldn't really take advantage of that. So you started to see that, but then the Pacers would counter with, well, let's just do the same thing and run on the Bucks. But you still see where Kyle Kuzma is bringing you that different dimension of his cutting ability. Doc talked about this quite a bit before the game, too, about what that does to trigger the offense and open things up for everybody that's on the floor. And it's, again, something they hadn't had before. Chris Middleton's not an off-ball cutter to the basket. But I think most Lakers fans would tell you, Wizards fans would tell you, too, but, I mean, what big games was Kyle Kuzma in? I think a lot of Lakers fans would say, hey, it's different in the playoffs. And we get that. I think you have enough proven guys that you feel like, I know what Giannis is as a playoff player. I know what Brook Lopez is in the playoffs. I know what Damian Lillard is. AJ Green got his first taste of the playoffs last year. Gary Trent Jr. has had a taste of the playoffs and has had some big moments. Kyle Kuzma, again, I made the comparison earlier in the year about, is this kind of like when the Mavs traded for P.J. Washington last year? Because the same story, he had never played in the playoffs, and he was kind of lumped in as he's a losing player, and he plays on a losing team. You don't know what you're going to get with him. And it's not like the Mavs went to the finals just because of P.J. Washington, but he was a big piece of it, and it unlocked things that that team didn't have, and their defense really started to climb. I think you're seeing some of that from Kyle Kuzma, but that's going to be the ultimate question when we get to the playoffs is the shooting. He was a very good 3-and-D player in that championship run with the Lakers in the bubble. Tonight, Kyle Kuzma was your only starter that did not reach double figures. 9 points tonight for Kyle Kuzma. And the three-point shooting, 0 of 3 tonight. I believe it's gotten better since he's arrived in Milwaukee, but like, that's going to be a guy that people help off of until he starts to hit shots in the playoffs. So the cutting and playing around the rim, I do think that's a big reason why we've seen more of that with Doc Rivers and how he uses Brook Lopez of, we can't just keep passing around the perimeter if guys are going to help off of Kuz and leave him open. Like, let's, they're going to help off. Let's start to make them pay and pack the paint, whether it be Giannis and forcing those doubles and dumping it down to Brook Lopez or whatever it is. But this is how we're going to change our offense. It's as simple as you need Damian Lillard to be the second best player on this team, clearly. And I said before, I think we all said this, any series the Bucks play in this year, in the Eastern Conference, they are going to have the best player in that series on the floor. And you thought, the hope is, in some of them, they may even have the second best player. That's what you need from Damian Lillard. If you're getting that, I do think the other pieces will fall into place. It's still going to be important for guys like A.J. Green and Gary Trent Jr. to hit shots. But it ultimately falls on those two guys. They have to be the two best players on this team and two of the three best players on the floor. You got a big opportunity to show that against the Los Angeles Lakers on Thursday night. Star power, maybe not quite there with no LeBron James. Luka Doncic is going to be there. And it's a Lakers team that's been playing pretty well defensively of late. So that's going to be a very good challenge for this team to try to snap this three-game losing streak. Same story for a day and a half later, 2 days later, when the Indiana Pacers come to town for their final game against you this regular season. And then you get the Oklahoma City Thunder, and then you go on that West Coast road trip. The hope is you have a winning month in this month of March. Right? A very tough schedule that the Bucks have here. Just continue to pick up wins. Keep pace with the Indiana Pacers. And thus, I don't know. Like, when we get further into the season, maybe we'll have that conversation of, well, is it actually not a bad thing if you finish sixth and you're getting the New York Knicks and then you get the Celtics in the second round if you win that series, opposed to this Pacers team that's been playing very, very good basketball of late up until this three-game skid without Halliburton. And then the Cleveland Cavaliers waiting for you in the second round. Who knows? It's too early to have that conversation. But that five-game West Coast road trip is going to tell you a lot about this team because of their overall road record, because of some of the numbers we've seen on five-game trips and the road trips in general so far for the last 2 years now. I mean, remember when Doc Rivers took over? That was at the start of a five-game trip. They go 1-4. That trip is probably going to tell you what you need to know about this team, because it's going to come into the last week of March, and then you're getting set for who knows what to expect in April. One day it looks like, all right, maybe not so bad. The next day, I don't know, is Phoenix going to be fighting for their playoff lives and trying to secure a 10 seed? Have the Pistons moved past you? Zion Williamson's racking up triple doubles. You got two games with the Pelicans. So we don't really know where that April schedule is as of this moment. There was some other news today. Speaking of disappointing days, there was some other news today off the court for the Milwaukee Bucks. We'll talk a little bit about what the Bucks lost today. Not the game, but the person in Junior Bridgman and his legacy and his career here in Milwaukee and off the court. Everything that that he stood for and that he accomplished throughout his life and the work that he put in with individuals in the NBA and teams. We'll get into that conversation and start to wrap things up after this on Bucks Talk. 115 to 114 final, the Indiana Pacers on a Tyrese Halliburton 4-point play send the Bucks to their third consecutive defeat and snap a 3-game losing streak of their own. So now setting things up for a big, big showdown Saturday night in Milwaukee between these same two teams, the final regular season matchup. But as of right now, this would be your first-round playoff series, with the Bucks currently the 4 seed and the Pacers the 5 seed. Let's see what questions you got for me, Matt.
Active YouTube comment, of course, after an interesting and disappointing game tonight. In terms of that final play, I want to get your thoughts here. You mentioned the defense that you would have put out there with the 5 switchable defenders compared to what we saw. Reaper's Ghost in our YouTube chat suggested they would have put all 5 defenders on the perimeter because they needed a 3. The Bucks were up by 3. So the idea there is to completely lock up the perimeter and let them do whatever they want inside the perimeter. What say you?
Yeah, I mean, again, I thinking through that, if you space guys out on the perimeter, you just inbound the ball at midcourt and let a guy, or just in front of it, and let a guy step into a deep three. So I would just much rather press and defend that play.
Sure. It certainly wasn't an easy shot from Haliburton, but an impressive shot nonetheless.
Did you... As soon as he released it, did you know it was going in?
Yeah, 100%. Doesn't mean it wasn't a tough shot, but we all knew it was going in. Another comment, Alana Yang said, horrible closeout by Giannis. Yeah. He wasn't in position to block the shot. Why even get close enough to be called for a foul? Also, bad challenge by Doc. We've covered that. And on the foul, I'll add this to it. You've mentioned it was a foul.
Yeah.
Is it a foul by the book, or if you wrote the rule book, would you say that's a foul?
Yeah.
You would.
He didn't give him space to come down.
Okay.
And we saw the tweet from Eric Name, too, that the Bucks bench, whatever the wording was, but they felt pretty strongly that Tyrese Haliburton stepped out of bounds. And I know on the TV broadcast, they kept trying to show that footage, but just like watching NFL games in the 90s where you don't have the pylon cam and you only have one view. That's what we had of, well, you got this view where it's really grainy, or you got this view that we think would show us whether or not his foot was down on that line, but Brook Lopez is blocking it.
Another one here, I think just kind of addressing some fans' dismay over this one. Trina says, looking like the same old Bucks teams from the past that beat ourselves over and over again, we make too many dumb mistakes.
Well, I mean,
decent amount of turnovers tonight.
Yeah, and the last couple games. To that point of beating yourselves in the same old, I mean, I remember we talked about this last year. When you looked at the Bucks' record and performance against the top teams in the league, it was pretty good. It wasn't the best in the league, but it was certainly better than this year. And I remember having this same conversation last year, that it was, look, if you believe in this team, there are numbers to support that and show you. Before we knew about the injury to Giannis, like, there's numbers to support. They have the best 5-man unit in the league by the numbers. They have a pretty good net rating against the top 10 teams in the league. Like, you can find enough to support that argument. You can also find areas to say, no, you shouldn't believe in this team. And I think the unfortunate part right now is you're really going off of eye test as your supporting case this year. That's the difference. If you stick to the numbers, which I typically tend to do, it's tough to find numbers that say this is a team that's a championship contender. Now, you still got a month of season to do that, and you still got quite a few big challenges. But, I mean, fourth quarter offense, clutch offense, your overall record in clutch games, the 0-9 record against the Cavs, the Celtics, and the Knicks, those are pretty big hurdles to overcome. And speaking of that fourth quarter offense number, a bad job by me. We didn't even talk about this or didn't spend much time on this, but how many shots do you think Giannis and Damian Lillard took in the fourth quarter? So the Bucks, as a whole, took 20 shots in that quarter.
I'll say 6.
3.
Wow.
They were 0 for 3.
Brook Lopez show.
Brook Lopez scored 11 points.
To his credit.
5 of 5 in the fourth quarter. Yeah.
I mean, they won this game, this is going to be the Brook Lopez game for me.
But you look at that of how are you not spamming Giannis and Dame, two-man game and pick and rolls. The fact, look, he scored 18 points and he hit 4 threes. But Torian Prince took 2 more shots in this game than Giannis did. And it wasn't even that number can be deceiving because Giannis took 11 free throws. Giannis took 3 free throws in this game. So, fine, tack on two more shots, basically. They took an even amount of shots. Like, that was one of the big standouts early in the game, too, of feels like a lot of Torian Prince here. That's, again, one of the big things. I haven't looked of where it sits now. I would imagine there was no improvement in the fourth quarter offensive numbers for this group, but it all kind of ties to what we said before of... It's tough to find numbers to support this. Like, you're basically, you're going on hope.
And right.
Hope's not a great strategy to have. It's not a strategy at all. But we got the best player in the Eastern Conference. We got Damian Lillard. We revamped our roster. There's more athleticism. I like the way that they're defending. Jericho Sims continues to have some nice moments for you. Kevin Porter Jr., I continue to be pleasantly surprised with in giving them aspects they haven't had before. A rough game for KPJ, taking, 4 shots to the face in this game. But that's what you're basically going off of, is I hope this works because we reshaped the roster and we have arguably the best player in the league. Fourth quarter numbers for the Bucks after this game. They were 30th. Coming into this game tonight, I wouldn't imagine we've seen any movement there. It was 27-26 fourth quarter tonight. So they are now 29th. They have moved past the Brooklyn Nets. They have a 106.1 offensive rating in the fourth quarter of games, which is 29th. A 108 defensive rating, which is 5th. And a net rating of -1.9, which is 19th. So, second worst offense, 5th best defense, and basically a bottom 10 team overall in the fourth quarter. And by the way, Bucks are 5th. The Pistons are 4th in fourth quarter defense. The Pistons were also very bad in the fourth quarter. They're 27th in offense, but their defense is better than the Bucks has been, and they're in the middle of the pack in fourth quarters. And again, that's a Pistons team you're going to have to worry about now. One again tonight. Malik Beasley, another big game.
Can I add one more question to the press conference here?
Sure.
So, obviously, we're talking about seeding with the Bucks, Pacers, and Pistons, but if the Bucks meet the Pacers in that 4-5 playoff series, as we stand right now, obviously, we think Bobby Portis would be back for that, which would help the Bucks' case a little bit. But how do you see that series going? A rematch of last year, but two different teams.
Famous last words. I strongly feel that the Bucks would beat the Pacers, if healthy, in a best-of-7 series.
And how much does home court advantage play in that? Because that's the difference between 4 and 5, right?
It's
different, at least right now.
The numbers have shown it doesn't really matter as much as we make it seem like it matters. I mean, the injuries, yes. Like, Dame missed, 2 games in that series? Giannis missed the entire series. The Pacers were the lower seed last year. The Pacers were the lower seed against the New York Knicks. And I know the Knicks started to break down towards the end of that series. But before the end and before that started to break down, the Pacers... being the lower seed, not having home court didn't matter. So the Miami Heat were the lower seed. And again, Giannis wasn't 100%, but they were the lower seed in every series they were in. We've seen less and less importance on that in the past few years. So I know I would have a pretty great deal of confidence against both the Pacers and the Pistons in a first-round series for the Bucks. We can't rule out the Knicks either. I know there were some questions about, hey, well, we should talk about catching the Knicks. I'm ready to close the door on that. To have to make up six games with 18 left, I think we have our answer there. I am very curious to see that final game against the Knicks because of the way the Bucks have reshaped their roster and how we've started to see teams defend the New York Knicks. Again, you don't know the Jalen Brunson piece to that, given the timeline they provided. And they didn't say he was going to be back in 2 weeks. They said they'd reevaluate or provide an update in 2 weeks. That would still put us to a week before that game is played. So probably going to be pretty touchy there. You got to win that game, though. Like, I mean, I don't know, and we said this earlier in the year when it was 0-4 and then 0-6. Like, I don't know what this means, but I know, like, you can't let this keep going. I don't know that it means you can't beat these teams in a best-of-seven series, although the numbers would tell you, yes, it does. But 0-10 against the Cavs, the Celtics, and the Knicks, yeah, whatever it tells you, it's not good.
And it's funny because the story a couple weeks ago was the Knicks were 0-whatever against both Boston, Cleveland, and they threw in
City,
OKC.
And, yeah. And I think the Nuggets, too. But, right. Yeah, I mean, same conversation for them. I think we talked about it after the Cavs game, and somebody was asking me about it earlier before this game, who will remain unnamed. That who would you rather play, the Celtics or the Cavs in the second round? And your initial reaction is, buddy, we got to get out of the first round first. But honestly, I don't know. Like,
because the Cavs have earned your respect.
I believe in the Cavs that much.
I mean, they've lost 10 basketball games.
They've lost 10 games, and yet they have a three-game losing streak this season. They just won their 15th straight tonight, the second time they've won 15 games in a row this season. It's like whenever a team wins a championship, except for 2021-22, whenever a team wins a championship, it's like you get to the point that you automatically write them off like, well, I don't think they're winning again. Like, we always do this thing of, is this the next dynasty if you're young enough? But then you slowly realize, like, no, the only quote-unquote dynasties we've seen were that Warriors super team that had two of the greatest players of all time and three of the best shooters of all time on that team. Other than that, we have seen you just don't repeat in this league for a bevy of reasons, and especially now when you look at all the cap implications, the second apron talk that, you know, all of us are well-versed in that now. And just the talent distribution throughout the league. Like, it's tough to repeat. So I think there's a part of that. I think there was a sense with the Celtics, too, of, man, they got everything out of that group last year. Like, all the questions over how do they execute in games. The offense was elite. The defense was next level. I think it's pretty clear they're, playing in middle gears here, like preserving themselves for the playoffs. They bring it out for the big games, like we saw Al Horford take down LeBron in that game over the weekend. They still have a ton of shooting. Sam Hauser just had a huge game. I think he had 9 threes in the quarter the other night. Peyton Pritchard just had a 40-point game. So they still have that. But Pat Riley and a few others said this along the way, too. It's tough to quantify, but once you get that championship, your thirst for the, like, yeah, you want to win another one, but it's not the same as when you haven't experienced it and you're pushing for that you know what it takes. Like, we can take it easy here. We can coast through this stretch of schedule. Let's just make sure we're healthy for the playoffs and let's save it for this. And that's always such a danger to. Not saying the Celtics are flipping the switch, per se. They still have the second-best record in the conference. But that whole notion is what's dangerous. So, like, those are the concerns over the Celtics for me. I'd still much rather be in their spot than where the Bucks are currently sitting. But that Cavs team, it would be hypocritical to write them off if you really strongly believed in the Bucks. And, you know, in 2020, 2021, if you were that guy, many of us, year after year, you know, those first 3 years of the Bud era, you came up short the first two. Like, I believe in this group, Giannis and Jrue Holiday at the time of that trade, but the entire group, Giannis and Chris and Brooke and Bud's offensive system, I believe in this group. They're going to get over the hump. It would be very hypocritical to be that person and say, I need to see the Cavs do it. Like, we said the same things about the Bucks in 2021, and kind of similar to the Bucks, it's a Cavs team that bulk of it has been together for a couple of years here. I mean, you can point to, hey, this is the same team that went to seven games against the Magic in the first round last year. Fine. But look at what the Bucks did the year before they won the championship. Like, they went to five games in the first round of the Magic, played five games and were embarrassed out of the bubble against the Miami Heat in the second round. Like, sometimes you have to experience those failures. The Celtics, too, right? They, year after year, of coming up short in the conference finals and then reaching the finals in 2022 and losing to the Warriors. Celtics went through that, too. That, I think that's a part of the checkpoint. The Warriors were the team that really kind of skipped the line in that regard. But those are things you have to go through. Donovan Mitchell's a proven playoff guy. Like, your questions are, how does Darius Garland look in the playoffs? He's been one of the best clutch players in the league. How do their bigs play together in the playoffs? Do they have to play both of them on the floor at the same time more in the postseason? But, I mean, this team, it's hard to find any holes in this Cavaliers team. The overall point of all of it is, it's not 2018. It's not 2019 anymore, where you would say your top two seed, you're getting the Detroit Pistons, you're getting the Orlando Magic, and, like, at very worst, it's going to be a gentleman's sweep. It's tough. There is no easy path, and look, the likelihood is you're going to have to beat both the Cavs and the Celtics to get to the NBA Finals. But you're going to have to win in the first round to even start to get there.
And the conference is deeper now than it was back then.
And, I mean, saying all that, I don't see a team in the play-in tournament that's going to push either of those two teams to even a single win here in this first round. But look, you got to get it back on track starting Thursday against Luka Doncic and the Los Angeles Lakers. It kicks off a big stretch, as we mentioned. Lakers on Thursday, final regular season game against the Pacers on Saturday, back-to-back against the Oklahoma City Thunder on Sunday. And then you're off to the West Coast for that five-game West Coast road trip starting, next Tuesday in San Francisco against the Golden State Warriors. So we'll see how things go on Thursday. We hope for better things. 6:30 tip on Thursday. 6 o'clock is when our pregame coverage begins. And as always, be sure to stick around after the game for Bucks Talk. We will talk with you then.